Hello, and welcome to a bonus episode of the Bedrosian Center's Book Club podcast. We usually read and discuss a book, or sometimes two, every month. We read new and classic works, fiction and non, through a lens of governance to really get at what it means to be in community in America today. I'm Aubrey Hicks, and I'm the executive director of the Bedrosian Center. And today we're going to do something a bit different. Lisa and I are going to take a look back at the last 5 years of the book club to recap and think about whether we think we've met our goals, what expectations we have going in, what expectations we have going forward, and what we hope to do for the future.
Yeah.
So with me is Lisa.
And I'm the guest today. Hi, my name is Lisa Schweitzer. I'm a professor in the Department of Urban Planning and Spatial Analysis and Gender and Sexuality Studies here at USC.
Thanks.
And I have been a guest here since the beginning.
You were on the very first podcast.
On the very first one, and I've been hosting for a little over a year.
Yes, and thank you. I'm so thankful that you have willingly given so much of your time to this.
I
love these conversations.
I really like what we do here. I think books are important.
So do I.
Especially now when... like I said, in our last recording that we just did a few minutes ago, we've got so much cheap, bad punditry and talking head journalism, and nobody's doing any actual work, it seems. And that, you know, taking time to read a book-length manuscript by somebody who's taken the time to research a topic seriously is something that I think is pretty essential to being a good citizen, and yet it's very hard to do that in a world that just demands so much from your time and energy.
Right. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, in the beginning we were thinking, oh, we're just going to do 45 minutes, but we realized that, you know, we can't really. I mean, sometimes an hour and a half isn't even enough to really get into all the things that we're thinking about. And you're right, you know, news is all about the clicks and the content.
Yeah.
And, you know, like just as fast as you can get it. And it almost doesn't matter.
Yeah.
If people enjoy it or not, as long as you get the click and you get the eyeballs or
That's
you
right.
get the downloads, everybody's happy. When we're not really thinking too
right.
deeply about all the things we're consuming. And, you know, it's part of the reason why, you know, Trump's Twitter meltdowns, you know,
of the week. Of the day.
You know, we forget,
yeah.
you know, we're on to the next thing. And, you know, instead of really saying, you know, what is good governance,
right.
let's talk about it.
Right. You know, that's actually one of the things that I find so shocking about being a policy professor in 2019. I have to spend quite a bit of my time talking with educated people. Right, people who have advanced degrees on what exactly Donald Trump has done that's impeachable. Now, at this point, it'd be probably easier to list what he's done that isn't impeachable.
Right.
But we have so little civics education, right? I mean, I'm an old lady. When I was young, we had civics in high schools, and I find it much more rarely now. And so the emoluments clause, what is it? It's a weird sounding word.
Right.
Right. What is foreign influence? What is the national interest versus personal interest? And the notion of a public interest is in many respects so debased in our political discussion that, you know, people with, like I said, advanced degrees will go, well, I just don't get what he did was, I don't get what he did was so wrong.
Right.
And that's a, it's tough, right?
Yeah.
Because it's for people who have long-standing careers in public institutions, the way that I have had. These are gross violations of norms, and they're not violations of norms that really need to be violated. You know, it's one thing to kind of overturn white supremacy in U.S. institutions. That would be a good populist.
I mean, you know, we complained more about the what was it, a hockey team or a lacrosse team that went to visit George W. in the White House, and they wore flip flops, and
yeah.
it's like that was more of a scandal than and that's not an. I mean. I don't know how I feel about flip-flops at the White House, but, like, it's not that big of a deal.
I can live with flip-flops in the White House.
I can live with, I mean, you know.
They're young people. They're there for a visit. I can live with traducing those norms.
Right.
And you know, trying to help people understand the difference between a politician and a leader. They're not always the same person.
But, you know, this sort of greed and, you know, it should be about public service, and it is not about public service.
This is really absent in our national discussion. Right. You know, there's a lot of reacting and reacting for people who don't like the guy or this or that or how he chooses to express his opinions on Twitter and what have you. But not as much, I think, core understanding of the real difficulties of governance.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why we have a whole institute dedicated to it is that what we do is not inconsequentially extremely difficult, even when you're trying to do it well.
Mm-hmm. Right? Because everything is connected and complicated. And, you know, I mean, goodness gracious, if homelessness were easy to solve,
We would have done it. And, you know, the other easy answer is we give up.
Right.
Which is unacceptable to me.
Gosh, yeah. Although sometimes it feels like we totally have. But our first, let's go back.
Yeah,
so
sure.
Our first book, we talked about some of these issues in
Capital.
Yep. Now, I have to admit that is one of the two books in the last 5 years that I did not
you
read.
You are such a trooper.
Well, you know, producer, and I try to write the sample questions. But yeah, I did not. I read a lot of reviews to write the questions for Raphael at that point. But that was a good conversation.
I think it was. We had a great group in the room. We had Richard Green, friend of the podcast, Raphael, whom we miss terribly.
Terribly.
But he's off fixing the world at the Atlanta Fed.
And someone we were just talking about earlier, Tony Bertelli.
Yeah, and Tony Bertelli.
Who's now at NYU. Penn State.
Oh, he's at Penn State. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to put a bell on that guy.
I know.
He keeps moving on me.
He does. He was in Milan, and now he's at Penn State. I can't imagine him in State College. Hi, Tony.
I can. It was a really interesting discussion. The nice thing about having Tony on board is that he was a political scientist, so we could have somebody in addition to the two economists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In what was really an Oprah Rose book.
Yeah, you know, the thing that I remember about that was Richard Green sort of wondering why we were talking about, was it one of the Brontes Brontes books that they bring up, or was it?
There was a lot of Balzac references, if I remember.
There was a lot of Balzac, but there was also, you know, some novels, and he's like, why is this French Germany. Economist talking about, you know, this Victorian, you know, novel? And it was like, yeah, like why are you not talking about
it? Well, and maybe
I feel like Richard has come sort of around in that.
You know, he's always been a fiction reader as long as I've known him.
But I think he's
but whether or not he saw that as really integral to thinking about policy,
right?
And I think this is actually something that's relatively unique to our podcast. Mm-hmm. I don't think there are a lot of policy podcasts out there that bring in fiction works and poetry, of all things. And here's a spoiler. I'm going to try to convince you to do a graphic novel next year.
Oh, I would do a graphic novel.
Totally, right?
Yeah.
There's a good one out on Hannah Arendt.
Oh.
I know. Yeah. We might be able to trap one of our other most cherished guests, Ange Marie Alfaro Hancock.
Hancock Alfaro.
I always mess that up. I feel like the Alfaro should go first because it's A.
Yeah, she's AMHA.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I'm wrong.
Because when I met her, she was Ange Marie Hancock.
So oh.
That's part of it, too.
Got hitched.
Yeah. And she's super happy.
Romance here on the Policy Podcast.
I know, right?
But that was, I think, and it's a nice innovation, but I was going to ask you about it. Do you feel like it's worked?
The podcast?
The bringing novels and poetry into the policy context setting.
I do. I think it's sometimes hard to get people in certain disciplines to really get outside of their comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, narrative is how most people encounter thinking about policy. I mean, most people are not reading bills. They're not, reading all the data. They're not reading papers. There are a lot of people who do. Mm-hmm. But I think for the most part, people encounter and learn about governance and the way people work from the news media and from narrative, mm-hmm. from movies, from books. I'm also a book geek. I love reading. Mm-hmm. So, and I like that we can get out of our disciplinary boxes. I think that's important. And we've had some really interesting things coming out of it. So one of my favorite podcasts was when we did Evicted. Mm-hmm. I should probably look and see who was on that. And there's so many books that I'm like, where is Evicted?
We've done a lot of work here.
Yeah. I mean, 5 years, it's 70 books, Evicted. So we had Liz Valletta and Chris Redfern. Mm-hmm. And Raphael Bostic on that one.
And Mott Smith, right? Hmm? Was it Mott on that one, too?
No, Mott was on the one about...
Oh, The Great Inversion. That was a bad title for that book.
He was on The Great Inversion, but he was also on The Rise and Fall of Urban Economies.
Ah. Mm-hmm.
Which I really did not like.
The book?
The book, yeah. That was one of those books... Well, let me go back to Evicted. So the thing about Evicted that I found really interesting was because... So Matt Desmond is a sociologist.
Right.
So it's an ethnography. But Raphael reading that, Richard Green reading that, Chris Redfern reading mm-hmm. that as people who study housing.
Right. As economists who study housing.
As economists who study housing were like, oh, there's this hole of data.
Right.
This hole in the data because we haven't been collecting information. Right.
There's a whole human story.
Right.
Behind all these data.
Well, that, but also like we weren't collecting
right.
the data.
Right.
On evictions. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there were calls to HUD to mm-hmm. say, we need to start collecting this data. And yeah, that's amazing. So,
that is amazing.
So that's kind of a tangible result, but also it was a great book.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and then a few months later, we did The Rise and Fall of Urban Economies. Mm-hmm. And that one I didn't like because to me, did you read that one?
I know you weren't. I wasn't on the podcast, right. but I have read the book.
I felt like they had a conclusion and then wrote to the conclusion. That's how, as a reader, mm-hmm. I felt. So, you mm-hmm. know, I felt like San Francisco was the winner and LA was the loser.
Loser.
From the, you know, beginning. But Raphael sort of pushed back on that. So he liked it. But disagreements.
It's all good. So we never came to a resolution about why we think reading fiction and reading poetry is good for policy students.
I just, you know, I think the narrative, you need the narrative.
Sure. So it's fiction helps us understand story.
Right.
Helps us understand things in a context where getting the details historically absolutely correct might not be important.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. It helps us understand truly important, right?
And empathize with people who are reading fiction allows you to empathize with people who are not you because
right.
you're reading from certain perspectives that you might never have encountered. Mm-hmm.
What about poetry? Empathy.
Yeah.
I am a major advocate of reading of all forms for anybody in policy who plans to write things. I have way too many people in the world who want to write things and not read anything. And it's a very ungenerous way to be a scholar. Mm-hmm. And it's also a good way to be a bad prose stylist. So one of the reasons why I read fiction is simply that it keeps me alive mm-hmm. in a rotten mm-hmm. world.
Yeah.
You know, I have friends that will never abandon me in the fiction that I have consumed. But I read an exceptional prose stylist and then go back to my own writing for the day and I look at all of the sentences that are terrible and that should be fixed and that do get fixed mm-hmm. because we just podcasted on Victor Laval. Mm. And I think we spend an insufficient amount of time really talking about what an excellent prose stylist he is.
Oh my gosh, there! I underline so many things in
really
that novel.
Beautiful just sentences.
The beautiful sentences, and also the pacing, yeah. And he knows when to do, you know, a succession of quick, short sentences.
Yep, and rhythm
for emphasis.
It's rhythm.
The rhythm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are the other books that we've read that where the writing just knocked you out?
Oh gosh, so many of them.
I have to say, some of it. Nguyen, in The Sympathizer, some of his sentences were so beautiful, they made me hold my breath when
yes.
I was reading them. Because I didn't want to even hear the sound of my own breathing.
Yeah.
In addition to the words on the page. There's just not an ugly sentence in that entire book.
No, and I will say, when we did The Sympathizer, I also read his nonfiction work, which I want to say is called History Never Dies.
Right.
And I almost think the writing in that is even better.
Ugh.
I mean, that man can write a sentence
yeah.
that stops your heart. Yeah.
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 And if you're writing that well about public policy, you're going to have a much bigger audience than if you're writing poorly or indifferently.
Right. Gosh, there's so many. I mean, there's some bad ones too. I mean, Kindred. We did Kindred by Octavia Butler, and I mean,
a magnificent book, really.
This is not fiction, but Down Girl, I thought was really powerful. Poetry, American Sonnets.
You know, philosophy is a field where you can kind of get away with writing badly.
Yeah.
Sometimes, and she does not write badly. She writes beautifully.
Yeah.
Is a big and powerful book, especially for someone as early in her career as that is. Kate Mann's book.
Yeah. I mean, on the, City of Inmates. Now, that episode of the podcast is not one of my favorites.
Really?
But the book is.
Because I was going to say, that's a magnificent book.
It's such a good book.
Do you think we sometimes don't do justice to the books? It's really hard sometimes.
You know,
to truly do justice to a book that's that good.
Yeah, and I think sometimes, you know, because we try to vary the people according to expertise, sometimes the chemistry is not right.
Yeah.
You know, so sometimes it's just the chemistry,
mm-hmm.
you know. And, you know, sometimes it's just the chemistry and it's not a great fit of people together.
Mm-hmm. Who do you think your dream teams have been? I have to say the group that discussed Citizen, I thought, did a great job. Claudia Rankine's Citizen.
So that was you and me.
Donna Jean
and Raphael.
Raphael and David.
Sloan. And David was on that one too.
Did a terrific job with that one.
I still sometimes wake up in the middle of the night thinking about that, because when we got to reading our favorite parts, I couldn't do it. You had to finish for me.
That's just because you have a tremendously big heart. It's one of the many reasons why we all love you.
I just couldn't. Yeah, that one. That is such a heartbreaking, beautiful, amazing work.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good one. You know, the chemistry one that surprised me the most afterwards was when we did Drown by Juno Diaz.
Mm-hmm.
Was Elizabeth Currid Halkett, Richard Green, Carolyn Balla, and Raphael Bostic.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see, you know, there were two people who came from more wealthy families.
Mm-hmm.
And had less of the of an othering experience,
mm-hmm.
and two people who had been othered
mm-hmm.
much of their lives, mm-hmm. and the conversation was really enlightening,
mm-hmm.
and I think they actually all got something out of it.
That's the best, right?
Right, that's what you want.
Yeah.
And
we're trying to do something here intellectually for ourselves. At the same time, we're trying to make halfway decent educational content to mm-hmm. put out for Bedrosian.
Yeah.
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 And to boost books.
Yeah.
That
reading,
we think are good.
Reading and book clubs and talking about books.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
I have to say, for me, another one of my dream teams was Ptolemy Gray.
Oh, yeah.
simply because I loved that book. I've got this new sort of insight about suggesting a book that I loved and having people actually end up hating that book.
I know, that's a hard thing.
You know, everybody in that room liked Ptolemy Gray for the right reasons. Mm-hmm. And Raphael had great insights. Lavanna always has great insights. She's so busy. We can never get her on enough, but she's always wonderful to have. Danielle was wonderful, and it's a terrific book.
It is a terrific book. I recommended that to our new undergrad student worker. I actually had never read any of Walter Mosley before that.
Oh, really?
And then he came to USC a few months after that, and they did a whole exhibit. It was really good.
Are you now happily enjoying some Walter Mosley novels?
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
I even like the new one set in New York.
Oh, I haven't read that one yet.
I liked it.
Good to know. I'm going to add more to my reading pile. What are some other ones that...
I was not on this podcast, but I very much ended up liking the discussion on radical markets.
Oh, good.
I thought I had concerns about that book discussion getting too technical.
Oh, I did too, because I was on that and I was nervous about that.
And I might not be the best person to gauge because I have an economics education. Mm-hmm. But I really thought that our guests did a nice job. Anthony Orlando is a perpetual favorite because Anthony is a dear.
He is a dear.
And Matt is extremely brilliant and likes to talk outside the field. Yeah, and very funny.
So funny.
And likes to talk outside the discipline.
Yeah.
So it ended up being, I think, a really nice treatment of a book that might not have gotten the attention that it really deserved.
Yeah, I mean, it's so far out there. I mean,
Jeff Jenkins, our director.
Yeah, and I was on that, and then I got to do the bonus episode with an interview with the author because he was here. Yeah, that was a good one. That was a hard book for me to get through.
Mm-hmm.
I am not an economist. There's a lot of jargon that I had to look up.
Yeah. I think for that book is one of those that for people who are really interested in the guts of policy, to really understand the extreme difficulty of what popular writers and this podcast really has to struggle with,
mm-hmm.
that we're dealing with people who pretty much all day, every day, are dealing with the guts and the minutia,
mm-hmm.
and the languages of their fields, mm-hmm. then try to translate that into something that somebody who's listening, who's interested and wants to know more about policy, but just doesn't have the... you know, language, the vocabulary,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's extremely hard to do that ambassador work, mm-hmm. in a way that's really welcoming to people who are curious.
Yeah. And I mean, as with a lot of academics too, there's the conflict between disciplines and,
right.
you know, we're at an interdisciplinary school,
mm-hmm.
And we have many disciplines. Many, many disciplines. And I almost think the planning department, I feel, does the best job in sort of being interdisciplinary.
Well, you know, if you're like me and you're a planner, you decided to be an interdisciplinary person when you got a PhD.
Yeah.
Because for those kinds of degrees, you're really building the intellectual foundation yourself that you're going to work from your
right.
entire career. Whereas with the applied disciplines like political science and economics, they have an accepted paradigm throughout
right.
the discipline that they're then working from.
Right.
And less so with political science than with economics, right? Because there's a bunch of different theories in political science. But
yes.
Yeah. But they at least have a really strong consensus on what they consider to be the domain of their study.
Right.
Yeah, see, for me, I'll read anything by anybody as long as it tells me something I didn't know before about cities.
Just cities? I feel like you will read.
I'm a voracious reader of all types, but that's my profession, right? That's where I write in.
Right.
So, you know, I don't feel like a person has to be an expert on cities to have insights about cities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And because so much of the work that I do in the classroom is training professionals who are going to be forward-facing, street-level right? Professionals working with community members and people from all walks of life. That emphasis that I have on good writing and good communication and being clear, right? And working with specialists and non-specialists, being able to do that code switching, I think is absolutely crucial to an ethical practice in urban planning.
Well, I'm 100% supportive of
but
that.
But again, it's easy to say, it's harder to do.
Yeah.
It's one of the great things about teaching undergrads.
Right.
So I teach 19-year-olds about the city, and boy, they catch me all the time using terms that just, you know, I use without thinking.
Right. Yeah. And I actually think that that's one of the my sort of underlying thoughts when I think about doing anything for Bedrosian, which is my audience is the public, but I'm also dealing with a lot of academics in different disciplines. And I would really like us to be able to all talk to each other because we're all experts in something. We all have an experience that is important. And
I mean, in my case, right, all of you living in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
So everybody got experiences in it.
Right.
Right. And people tell me things about things that they do in the city that utterly astonish me sometimes. Their preferences for some things or how they use transit much differently than anybody ever envisioned.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so in that way, everybody has insights.
Right. And, you know, for, you know, a really long time, you know, whether whatever discipline it is, political science, public admin, whatever it is, you know, a researcher will come up with a question and try to answer the question, but not ever involve the community. And I think as a school, we're trying to be more of a part of the community and, you know, allow the community to drive the research.
Mm-hmm.
We don't always win.
You know, one of our regular podcast guests, David. For me, David and Lavanna pretty much embody that kind of research ethic, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, that's the
and
model.
And Giovanna, right? She hasn't come visit us yet, but Giovanna is very much a community-oriented researcher where the questions that the community has or that groups have that they need to do the work that they want to do are the things that get brought into the research and get centered.
I mean, that's always, and it's been a frustration with some of the faculty. You know, when you ask time of the community to do surveys or whatever, there should be an expectation that then we follow up and we get back, this is what we found. Here are our takeaways, you know, and that hasn't really been, you know, academia's strong point.
That too is harder to do than we think it is.
Oh, it's super hard.
Anytime you're working with external groups, there's often a misunderstanding of what scholarship is,
right?
How it functions and what your job is,
right?
As an academic. And, you know, I think a lot of people want to do research because they have answers,
right?
As you said about the book that you didn't love so much. And if you don't have the same answers, then there's conflicts. And that, I think, is a very difficult thing to work through. But again, David and Lavanna, really remarkable, patient, committed people to just making sure that they work through those issues with whoever they're partnering with. I don't have that kind of patience. That's why I am a theorist.
Okay, but I think you participating in this project is part of that.
For me, my teaching is a big deal. So if I have a group that wants me to come talk, if I have a, you know, local group that needs some sort of information gotten, they don't have access to the libraries, that's all things that I can totally do.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that I have appreciated about doing this podcast over the years is we used to actually ask it explicitly, but it's kind of a hard question to ask in the moment, is, you know, how a conversation about something will change the way you're thinking about something. I mean, I still don't like the rise and fall of urban economies. I'm sorry.
It's not required.
I know. But, you know, it did, you know, hearing Raphael talk about the things that he found that were really good scholarship in that, obviously, if Raphael, to me, if Raphael thinks that this is good scholarship, I'm going to really think about it. Mm-hmm. And I thought about things in, you know, a slightly different way. And, you know, the way Richard has sort of incorporated thinking about when we talked about the last book, Career and Evil, talking about the way she was talking about the inequity in the city, mm-hmm. you know, that was an amazing moment.
So you've seen an evolution in us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. All of us are 5 years older.
Yeah.
God help us if we haven't learned anything in 5 years. That'd be sad.
Right. And I think, you know, to me, that's also, you know, we have this idea that you're an expert and then you're an expert.
Yeah.
And that's it.
That's it.
When, you know,
you're completely formed.
Right.
You never need to learn anything ever again.
Right. And that's not
if only that
the
were
way
true.
It works,
it
right?
It wouldn't be any fun if
I
it
mean,
were true. But
hopefully every day, yeah. all the people in the world are learning something yeah. new about themselves, about their yeah. friends and loved ones, about the world. And this is, you know, for me, a way that we've been able to capture some of it on microphone.
Mm-hmm.
And let people know that, yeah, we, you know, we're academics. A lot of us are experts in really amazing things and have done a lot of work. And then we still
sure
want to keep learning and we learn from each other.
Another one of our dream teams that I think was a complete surprise because we had two people I had never even met before that day was Bless Me Ultima by Rodolfo Anaya.
Oh, yeah.
With Stacey Patterson. And Sylvia D'Souza and Caroline. Now, I had known Caroline before, and we had
I think Bless Me Ultima. Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, yeah, right? I'm right.
I think Sylvia didn't make it, but
oh, that's
Caroline
right.
was on. And Carol- I,
yeah, so and you sat in for Sylvia. That's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That ended up being a great discussion. Not inconsequentially, because it's a great book.
It is a great book. But yeah, because, you know, I didn't, I thought about it. Knowing Stacey Patterson was from the area, but I didn't realize how closely she was from the area.
Well, and how strongly the landscape was built into her identity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or how eloquently and beautifully she'd talk about the place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That turned out to be a good one.
The fact of a body was a really interesting one for me.
In what way?
We have, you know, we've done a couple true crime books. Mm-hmm. They've been excellent true crime books. That one was a really excellent true crime book. And that was one of those moments where our host really surprised me. I thought Jeff had really interesting insights into that book. And he had a really endearing way of talking about what were actually really quite difficult issues. I have an innate mistrust of dudes when talking about sexual abuse and sexual violence.
Yeah.
And he handled the discussion really quite well. And, you know, Brittany is wonderful, friend of the podcast, Brittany Shannon. She's also in another one of my favorite, what was that one called? This Is How It Ends. Do you remember who was on that one?
David, you.
Me, Brittany.
Brittany. Oh, that is kind of a lovely team.
Yeah. It was just a really great discussion, and it's a very nice novel.
Oh, and Anthony was on when we did draft number 4.
Yeah.
The Fact of a Body. Yeah. That one did surprise me. That was a good one.
Mm-hmm. Which ones really surprised you?
Hmm.
I have to say, I did not think that I was going to like body horror as much as I did. I ended up loving that book.
I loved that book.
I really did.
And I
loved it even more after our discussion.
Yeah. And I really appreciated Chris
yeah.
Redfern sort of taking himself out on a limb to
yep.
talk about that.
That is not a book that I suspect, you know, Chris was likely to pick up on his own.
I think the hardest one so far to do, well, there have been some hard ones where, you know, we start off without good chemistry and then we have to sort of work into mm-hmm. it. But was White Fragility, because it wound up being just by nature of...
Was there a lot of fragility?
I mean, yes, there yeah. is, you know. And, you know, there's also this... I find that academics, male academics in particular, no, that might be sexist of me, but I'm not sure. In my anecdotal experience, in my own experience, male faculty want the, okay, so here's the problem.
Right.
Here's all the things that are evidence of the problem. And then here are exactly the three steps you do. Right.
To fix the thing.
Right. And
I think that's true, particularly of specific disciplines. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think Raphael often would say, well, I want to know how do we fix this? You know, and sometimes it's just, well, talking about it is really the first step, right? We kind of have to sit with it and, you know, really think about it. And that was the same with white fragility. Chris was like, okay, so now what do I do in my classroom? You know, like, what do I do? And, you know, the answer is, well, you sit with it and you
stop it.
Identify when you're being fragile. Right. And find ways to make yourself okay with the vulnerability.
Yeah. You'll live.
But that's not the exact answer that he wanted. But that one also surprised me because people
That's
at
another
the
one
school,
that's going to take him out on a limb.
Right? Oh, this it took him totally out on a limb.
Pretty far outside his wheelhouse.
I don't think we talked about economics at all. Or housing, even. Mm-hmm. But that one also got some listeners who we hadn't had before at the Price School.
Sure.
Because we talked about a book that they felt was really important.
Well, it is. It's a wonderful book.
And so, you know, I met people, had more conversations with people about that book than I expected after the podcast came out. So I thought that was surprising and fun.
Another one of my favorites are the plays that we've done.
Yeah.
We've done how many? We've done Richard the Second or Third?
Richard the Second.
We did Coriolanus.
And then this year we did Antigone.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've only done three.
I think we've only done three plays. But I've very much enjoyed those, largely because y'all made me read some Shakespeare plays that I read a really long time ago, didn't think very much about, and then sort of booted me about the head about the unbelievable policy relevance of Shakespeare's writings.
Mm-hmm.
Those were great discussions.
I mean, Coriolanus was
so privileged. Donna Jean really helped us out a lot on those.
Yeah. It is good to have someone who worked for a long time at the Folger Shakespeare Library.
Yeah. And, you know, there's how many people really get the luxury of being able to revisit, you know, their college Shakespeare or their high school Shakespeare with somebody who has that depth of knowledge. And then with Antigone, having Carla here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. And that brings me to one of my favorite conversations, which was on, it was you, me, and David talking about the book Slow Reading.
Mm-hmm.
Was it Slow Reading?
Mm-hmm. We read Slow Reading and Slow Philosophy.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Was it called Slow?
I thought it was.
I'm getting the, because we read two books that it was.
We just podcasted them at the same time. And I think it was just called Slow Reading.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm not finding it, of course, on my list of 70 books at the moment.
I think that one might have been a special.
That might have been. Because that, so that book was a challenge for me because it's philosophy. And I mean, it was very well written. But again, I had to like really go back and read the sentences to make sure that I was understanding.
That's philosophy.
Yeah.
You know, this is a philosopher who's not really working for a popular audience.
But the ideas in there, you know, and then being able to.
Well, and then the literature that she referenced us to. There's a lifetime of reading her reference list.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that one.
Yeah. That's why I really, really wanted to get at least one philosophy book. And we've done more than one.
Mm-hmm.
We've done some very nice ones. Simply because we're sort of in this moment where we've got people sort of assuming they know what philosophers do and not really thinking about them as useful people.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you really engage with the ideas, you understand that they're really innovating. Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, I'm sure there are people doing unimportant work because that's the way it is everywhere. And mm-hmm. who the heck knows if your work is important while you're doing it? It's really hard to understand that while you're doing it. Well, feels like you're doing what you're supposed to be doing.
The Devil in Silver, there was that whole chapter about Vincent van Gogh.
That's right.
which I thought was a beautiful chapter. We didn't even get to talk about it on the podcast.
I couldn't have that one treated badly.
No, I know. I didn't bring it up.
Yeah.
That was one of my favorite lines was actually in that chapter, but I didn't think the chemistry in the room was the right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that for me is a big question for the podcast and for me as a host is I have a lot of trouble podcasting or discussing books that I didn't like very well. I don't. Now that I'm a full professor, I don't write book reviews unless I like the book.
Yeah.
If the author is junior.
Yeah.
If somebody's full or above or in doubt or whatever, they can take their lumps. They're big kids. They can take care of themselves. But I won't publish a book review slamming some kid's book. And regardless of whether you like a book or not, you know, this is somebody's effort here.
Yeah.
And treating it badly is something that feels rather dishonorable to me. I know how damn hard it is to sit in the cold morning with your cup of coffee trying to make something real happen on the page. And so I just don't like to treat work dismissively. And I also find those conversations not terribly interesting.
You know,
didn't like it at the end.
Yeah.
I couldn't dance to it.
You know, there have been a bunch of books that I haven't liked, but I've still liked the conversations mm-hmm. about them. And I do often apologize to the authors. They're never going to hear this, right?
Oh, I can't believe for 5 seconds some of these authors are not listening.
Yeah. I think...
you'd be surprised how unbelievably fragile the writer's ego is. I know mine is.
Yeah.
It's like 4 times worse than my id, and my id is bad enough, my friend.
especially in the beginning, there were a lot of ones that I started picking because I had read them.
Mm-hmm.
And in the beginning, some of them were sort of group choices. But once we started doing fiction, the first couple were ones that I had loved. And so I was nervous about discussing them. So I understand what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also not the kind of person who totally dislikes everything about a book. Like, mm-hmm. I can still find...
You have enough charity in you to see the best in it. That's what I usually do, too. I have to say, even though I can be awfully snarky, I can usually find something redeeming about most books. I have to say, I never did that with The Death of Truth.
You know, part of it, I think, is that I follow him on Twitter.
Okay.
And, you know...
Good on Twitter?
He's good on Twitter, you know?
Maybe that's a good métier.
I think it's a good medium for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the consensus was that we didn't really like the book.
Uh-huh.
I do think that he had something there, but he did what he complained about in the book. And I think that was the biggest problem with it. But I don't always agree with him.
Uh-huh.
I mean... at all.
Uh-huh.
But I do learn
uh-huh.
a lot from his Twitter feed. So I like his Twitter feed, and that's why
cool.
I chose the book.
You know, this is something that I don't think most people realize, is that people who are writers understand perfectly well that sometimes we write a bad book.
Yeah.
One of the refreshing things about Stephen King is that he's brutally honest about his own work. Especially when he had expanded his consciousness using pharmaceuticals. You're going to write a bad paper. You're going to write a bad piece. You're going to write a bad article. You're going to write a bad poem.
and I'm going to say the wrong thing.
You know, it's going to happen to you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like flops in films. You know, sometimes films flop because it's just not the right moment for them. They're not promoted the right way. They just don't catch on as much as they deserve. And then some of them flop because they're just not very good. Right. And they might have been good in concept, or there's just something, or maybe, and you know, I've certainly heard authors say this before, and this happened to me too, is I once had to throw away a book because I just wasn't ready to write it.
Yeah.
And you just don't know. You've got the idea and you don't know what you're capable of doing until you actually challenge yourself to try to do it.
Yeah. And I think The Death of Truth, that one in particular, I think he might have been a little bit too close, mm-hmm. too emotional about it, which is a funny thing to say about.
I think there should just be a moratorium on quoting the Federalist Papers, unless you're actually writing a book about the Federalist Papers.
Oh, yeah.
I have all of these arbitrary rules that I would like to impose upon the world.
Well,
that are actually not very inconvenient to most people.
Yeah. So what would you, like, if there was one thing that you could go back and change?
I think for the future of the podcast and looking over our book selections, we really do need to do better at dealing with global literature, about looking at foreign policy, international relations, do a somewhat better job there. We don't have a lot of expertise within the school itself.
That's actually part of the reason why I sort of stayed with mostly American authors immigrant to American authors.
And I think that's fine, but I think 5 years of that is good. Mm-hmm. But I think we need to start challenging ourselves more.
Yeah.
Simply because there is just some tremendously good writing being done, mm-hmm. internationally about, mm-hmm. policy,
yeah.
in extremely interesting places. There's, mm-hmm. some absolutely marvelous work in translation. The translator's art being dreadfully underappreciated in the world. But we're not, you know, we haven't really even read much in the way of Canadian authors. We should be reading, and we've got terrific writers coming out of Mexico, mm-hmm. right now. Some wonderful Chinese poets that are potential, mm-hmm. you know. So that's one of the things I wish we could have done somewhat differently. But I don't really, I mean, which book would I take off here? As you recall, I didn't like Ender's Game, so I refused to podcast that one. And that was one because we had a student who really likes the book. And I really do not want to be one of those professors,
yeah.
who kills somebody's affection for a book. Just because I didn't like it doesn't mean that it's not wonderful.
Right.
I mean, that book has sold a lot more copies than any book I'll ever write.
And that conversation went in a totally different way than I expected it to at all.
Yeah.
And I was there. So, I think if I could go back, I would try to do a little bit more prepping. We got some feedback when we did An Unkindness of Ghosts about the gender pronouns of the characters.
That was my fault.
I don't think it was your fault.
No,
I mean,
it was my
because
fault.
I
that was my fault, and I take responsibility for it. I'm doing the best I can here. I am 100% supportive, but I grew up in a different time, and I'm literally like online seeking out training how to be more trans supportive as a professor.
Yeah, me
but
too.
I'm just not perfect, but that was my fault.
No, I don't. I think that was all of our faults. Mm. But as a producer, I probably should have really.
Yeah, I was the host.
I knew the author was they. And I think we corrected that as we talked about it. But I actually had read the two main characters very differently, uh-huh. than I think the author intended. And I didn't pay attention to the pronouns, mm-hmm. that were used in the book.
Sure.
And so part of it is that sometimes, you know, I read the book a week, you know, before we're doing it. And then I don't remember very well because, you know, I'm on, you know, on to the next thing. But that one, I just think I should have paid more attention specifically.
We could all do better all the time in finding good ways to support our trans friends and listeners.
Yeah.
Right. This is for me, having to change a lot of classroom practices because I always referred to my students as Mr. or Ms. or what have you, and I just think that doesn't fly anymore. Yeah. And I don't want to call them by their last names. We're not in boot camp.
Oh, I hated being called Hicks. I'm sorry.
Hicks.
I mean, high school.
Drop down and give me 20.
High school Hicks is not the best last name.
Yeah, no, that's not my style either. It was always meant to be a respectful way of relating to people, and it's not, right? It doesn't work for people, and
it's not the same in all cultures.
Yeah,
we're trying to make it work.
I have a lot of Chinese students who can't really manage my last name because of all the vowels stuck together and all the consonants. Well, so I end up being Dr. Lisa or Professor Lisa.
Yeah.
And I can tell they don't like that.
Yeah.
But they really want to use my title.
Right.
So I'm like, this is probably the best we're going to do, which is fine. I feel like I am more than my titles. What do you want to do? What is your wish list for the future, kiddo? Do you want to retire? You want to keep going?
I would love to keep going. I would love to have more listeners. I always would love to have more listeners and get more feedback. I would love to hear what people want us to read, what people think of the conversation, whether they got bored halfway through, whether they, you know, I would like more of that.
One of the things I would also like to do is just have a little bit more to add to each podcast about the quality of the audiobook if it's available.
Oh.
So one of the things about An Unkindness is that the audiobook is very, very well read.
That is a good
thing. The same thing is true of The Devil in Silver.
Oh, I haven't listened to that.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's add that to our
Because
thoughts.
For people who are not necessarily readers, but who prefer to have audiobooks, well, you know, and this is a perfectly valid way to engage with books, to be able to say with confidence that the narrator does an excellent job.
Honestly, that's how I've been reading Agatha Raisin this whole summer. I've been listening to the same narrator read all. I think I'm on book 12 or something, I think I enjoy it more as an audiobook than I would have reading it. I enjoy so that's a good thought. The other thing. I sort of wish that we could just have a dream team. Uh-huh. And I hate to do that because I do like getting all of the extra voices. But I do think some of the hard part is getting the chemistry right.
That's right. And helping people understand that this isn't really a book club that's about whether you liked the book or disliked the book or this or that. It's not your lit crit class from undergrad. This is us really trying to talk about the themes in the book.
Right.
And what that means to our world today. Like, how can we make those kinds of connections? And those of us who do it all the time take it for granted, but it's something new for new people.
Yeah.
And some people can jump in faster than others.
Right. Yeah. So I do sometimes wish that we had the same people, because as a listener, I prefer to listen to, you know, because you get to be, you know, they're your friends in your head, right? Even though I've not met any of these people that I listen to all the time, you know, I know their quirks and I know
Ann Milligan and
exactly.
Preet Bharara.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
They're my buds.
Yeah. And, you know, you learn to... what advice of theirs to take and, you know, what to laugh at. And you start to understand people's humor a little bit more. So I do wish that we could do that. It's just hard because reading, you know, I'm happy to read, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15 books, you know, one a month. But we also, you know, this is sort of volunteer.
I'm actually getting paid a lavish salary for my appearances here. How about you?
I bought an island in Fiji last week. I would never have asked you to do this if you were junior.
Oh, because, no, of course not. I feel guilty when we get junior faculty on as it is.
As it is. But also, I love when Pam is
She's
not
great.
Junior anymore.
Yeah.
But like,
she got tenure.
I know. Yay.
Or graduate students, you know.
I think that's grad students. Yeah, I mean,
it's great having them on, but they also have a million things to do.
Right.
We've got a huge contingent faculty
but
on
I
this
also,
campus who are worked to death.
Right.
and don't need anything else added to their list of things to do.
Right. I mean, if David Sloan could be on every podcast, that would be great.
Tell him to get his act together.
But like this month, he's in D.C. right now. I mean, you know.
At Mount Vernon, no less.
So I understand that that is a hard thing to do. Mm-hmm. But I do kind of wish that we could do that for listeners.
Maybe we can think about trying to have a core group that we just have in and out a little bit, because mm-hmm. you know, we've been shaking it up a lot recently.
Yeah, and some of it has worked wonderfully. I mean, I've met some wonderful people through the
podcast. Wanda Lara was a magnificent.
Oh, my gosh. You
know, David Troyer.
David Troyer is
wonderful.
So, listeners, we did try to get David on to talk about with Lisa to talk about his new book. But I don't know if you saw, but he's a finalist for the National Book Awards. So, no wonder why it was hard to schedule.
He's a little busy.
A little busy.
I hope he wins.
I'm so happy though, because I mean,
that's a big deal. Just making the finalist. But I really hope he wins. He deserves it. It's a great book.
It's a great book and an important book.
Yes, it is. That is another one where his audiobook reader does justice to the book.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll read it again that way.
Yeah.
Because I have to read it again. I am not anywhere near.
You will. For those of you who haven't had a chance to, the book is
Heartbeat of Wounded Knee.
Heartbeat of Wounded Knee by David Troyer. And you will understand why we absolutely need to forget Columbus Day.
Yeah.
All that guy and all of his buddies were scumbags. Just heart-wrenching stuff.
Yeah, and, you know, I think this is one of the ongoing themes of the podcast, but, you know, part of the reason we have all these wicked problems is because we've not dealt with the violence of our policies.
And we've allowed ourselves to remain uneducated about race. And when I say we, I mean white people. I don't mean everybody else.
Yeah.
Who has lived experience, but, you know, people who control the institutions are uneducated about race, which is one of the nice things about people sort of getting into books like Evicted, which I do have a few problems with Evicted, but it's also a very good book. Don't get me wrong. But we have a lot of white guys running things and they've got a limited disciplinary scope and they don't know what they don't know.
I mean, which is why political scientists did not study policing as an institution until the last decade or so. And that's crazy to me. I mean, the street level bureaucrats
the
police, teachers.
Oh, well, post office workers. There often is not a lot of care.
Right.
Shown to their training for public interaction, and then the mission and goals of the institution is very different than what it perhaps should be.
Yeah.
So you got anything else?
I have just really enjoyed this. So I hope.
I think the best thing about the podcast is it's given me a chance to get to know you better. You're a real asset to USC. Yeah, well, they're not getting rid of me. But I hope we keep you for a good long time, because this has been a wonderful, wonderful chance to learn more, both from the books and from my colleagues. And you have excellent taste in books. So it's been very fun to do this with you.
You've picked the books for this year.
Well, I'm a little bit worried. That's one of the reasons why we're having to scamper around, because I think I have the tendency to have pretty weird tastes in literature. But
I don't know that I agree.
Yeah. I've never actually been able to be a part of a book club before. I've always ended up with people who wanted me to read John Krakauer and Barbara Kingsolver, which I would suffer through. Which there's some very fine books that both of those authors have, but never the ones that were picked from the months that we read them. And then I would, you know, try to sneak something in, like Flaubert's Parrot by Julian Barnes, and nobody would read it.
Okay.
Nobody would read it.
I mean, yeah.
I'm sorry, but that is a funny book, and it is worth reading.
Yes.
And more people should read Flaubert, and more people should know about his parrot.
There you have it. There you have it.
See what I mean?
I love book clubs, and I'm glad that you're a part of this book club, and I thank you so much for hosting. Should we end?
Yep, let's let her
end. All right, that's a wrap. Please, clearly, we want to know what you think. And to find the whole suite of podcasts, we have something called Real Review. We talk about film. And we have something called PS You're Interesting, where the PS is political science. So just search USC Bedrosian on your favorite podcasting app. The best place to leave a review is on Apple Podcasts. The more people will find us. Next month, we're reading The Seven Necessary Sins for Women and Girls by Mona Eltahoway.
We'll and figure that out.
I did not do my video look at see how she pronounces her name. But read along with us. It's a short book, and it's got a fantastic cover. Seriously, look it up. It's got a fantastic cover. Follow us on social media. Sign up for the Bedrosian Center's newsletter. And thanks to my co-producer, Jonathan Schwartz, our host, Lisa Schweitzer, the sound editors, the brothers Hedden, and today, Brad is with us. Thank you, Brad. So signing off, I'm Aubrey Hicks, coming to you from the University of Southern California, Saul Price School of Public Policy. Thank you for listening. We'll catch up again soon.